evening. Welcome to CCWC Live Blog Talk. I'm Lori Robinson, your host for this evening. And our guest today is Valerie Burton, certified executive coach and author of the newly released book, Successful Women Think Differently. Valerie, thank you for joining us this evening.
Hey, Lori. It's good to be with you.
I read your book, and it's excellent.
Thank you.
You've really cracked the code on it, and from your book, we know that success and happiness, they're all in the mind, and it boils down to our thinking. Everyone on this call, I want you to know that you need to go get Valerie's book. She provides a great blueprint on how we can live happier, healthier, and more resilient lives. Valerie, I'm ready to jump right into this.
Okay.
In your book, you start with chapter one, and it's headed, Believe You Can Do It. And you point out that successful women believe in themselves. Now, believing in oneself, that really just seems like a no-brainer. But in your book, you point out some examples where we can be our own worst enemies. For example, you tell us to own our success and not to explain our success away. Can you share with our listeners what you mean by what you called the imposter syndrome and how that hurts us in our ultimate achievement?
Sure. You know, I think the bottom line is that, you know, a lot of times when we look at successful people, and obviously, you know, women in your organization have been successful in a lot of ways, but I don't just define success here as, you know, external success. It's not just about where we've gotten in our careers. It's about how happy we are, how resilient are we. And when we look at really successful women, it's not just about following a blueprint or what steps did you take, but when you face obstacles, what do you say to yourself? And when you succeed, what do you say to yourself? So there's a lot of research that shows that the people who are most successful say different things to themselves when they succeed as well as when they fail. And so this whole concept of the imposter syndrome is simply that, and it really, the imposter syndrome affects more women than men, far more women, and it affects black women more than the general population of women. And it simply means that a lot of times when we succeed, we don't necessarily connect the dots between our own efforts and our success. So we end up feeling like we are somehow an imposter when we're sitting in that boardroom. We're more likely to attribute it to luck or more likely to attribute it to things outside of ourselves. And so it's really important that we understand what we bring to the table. And I think men a lot of times are, you know, more inclined to take credit. You know, yeah, I did that. As women, we're taught even as little girls to be more gracious about it. And so when I talk about the imposter syndrome, even for some of the most successful women, they'll report, I feel like a fraud, or I feel like people are going to find out that I'm not as great as they think I am.
Well, let's talk about just that self-sabotage. Because I'm sure that some people may not even know that they are actually in their own way. Is there a short test we can take or questions we can ask ourselves to assess whether we stand in the way of our own success?
Well, I think deep down most of us know. It might not be something that we say out loud. You know, several years ago I wrote a book called What's Really Holding You Back. And when I wrote that book, it was because somebody asked me that question. And it just, you know, it just really hit me in my gut. And I realized that for me, it was a fear of rejection. I would keep my goals. They were big goals, but they were small enough that I felt like I didn't have to ask others for help because I feared that I would not be accepted, that they would not say yes, that they would not want to help me. And so when we're holding ourselves back, we usually know, even if we can't identify exactly what it is that's holding us back. And so you just have to do a gut check. A reality check to say, am I really going for it? Am I really breaking through my fears, or is it time for me to get clearer about what those fears are so that I can muster the courage to move past them?
Well, when it comes to striving to achieve success at a high level, you tell us in the book not to downsize our dreams. Mm-hmm. How do we need to adjust our thinking to make sure that we are being all that we can be?
Off with these seven decisions I ask you to make before you even go into the first chapter. And the first one is I do not downsize my dream. It's very interesting to me that oftentimes we will take whatever it is we really want, and if we don't really believe that we can have it, we'll adjust it. So, you know, I like to use the example of the, you know, the English teacher who really wanted to write novels, but she settled for that. Now, someone else, that's their calling, being an English teacher. But if you know in your heart that's not what you really wanted to do, then you know you're downsizing your dream. There's a quote that I love from Mark Twain. He said, "It isn't the things that we did that we most regret, it's the things we didn't do." And so if you really look ahead, you know, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, if you were looking back, what is it that you would have wished that you did? You know, what is it that you're holding out on, that you're not moving towards, out of fear, out of whatever self-sabotage might be going on? And again, you know, those of us who have had a nice level of success can be very good at hiding, right? Because it looks like everything is great, but oftentimes you know there's something more for you, and it's important not to downsize that, not to bury it, but instead to begin nurturing it. And even if it isn't something that you need to be doing right now, there may be steps that you can take to begin laying the groundwork for it in the future.
And in your book, you point out that we should constantly renew our minds and our thinking. And what is encouraging about this concept is that it shows that in life it's never too late to start fresh. Some people have had failures. Some people want a new job. They want a new career. They want new and better relationships. Going back to your earlier point, fear holds them back. How can we change our way of thinking today to conquer the fear that keeps holding us back?
Well, you know, in the book, I share 9 habits that make you happier and healthier and more resilient, and all of them tie back to your thoughts. I really believe when it comes to our fear, the most important thing we can do is to acknowledge that we have fear, acknowledge when we're making excuses, because a lot of times we do. We call them reasons, but a lot of times what they really are is just an excuse. And I think there's a few questions you can ask if you are making excuses. If it's, you know, well, I don't have enough time, I don't have enough money, you know, if I was at this point in my life, et cetera. And you know really when it's an actual legitimate reason and when it's an excuse. And so you want to ask, you know, what is my excuse? And what does this excuse give me permission to do or not to do, right? And you know what that answer is for you. And then if I could no longer use this excuse, what would I have to do instead? That's a really important question. And then why don't I just do that right now? You know, I think it's important for us to be as truthful as possible when we're able to shed light on the real things that are happening emotionally, mentally, spiritually, that fear begins to dissipate. You know, fear really grows in the dark, right? Just think about when you were a kid and you were afraid of the dark. You know, you turn the light on, you realize, oh, I'm fine. There's not a monster over there. And so the truth really does that for us. When we acknowledge that we feel the fear, even telling somebody that you feel fear opens the door for you to begin talking about that fear. And as you talk about it, often you realize, you know what, I can move forward despite my fear, or that fear isn't as large or doesn't have as big of consequences as I thought. And sometimes maybe there are consequences, but as you talk about it, you're able to begin devising steps to conquer your fear.
When we talk about success, some people measure success by society standards or by measuring what others have. In your book, you tell us to stop comparing up. Can you explain this point in more detail?
A lot of what I share in the book is research-based. It's always spiritually grounded. That's the background I come from. I always line it up with scripture. But there's a lot of research in the field of positive psychology, which is the study of what goes right with people as opposed to what goes wrong with people, which is what traditional psychology tends to focus on. That's an important endeavor, but what goes right with people is really about what makes you happier, what makes you more resilient. And one of the things that is known is that very often, and television does this, we see so much television, our environments and the people that we see does it, but when we're constantly comparing up, in other words, we only compare ourselves with those who are doing better, then excuse our view of our own level of success or failure. And so you want to make sure that you've got some kind of balance in your own environment, because people who compare up tend to be far less happy. And if you think about it, in watching television, I mean, there's studies that show television numbers are completely skewed when it comes to, you know, showing people being in wealth, showing people having really large homes, showing people being completely happy without a whole lot of problems or issues in their families and so forth. So you want to be very conscious about the environments that you put yourself in and how you're making those comparisons. Preferably, you're not making a lot of comparisons, but when you do, you want to ask yourself, do I compare myself up and never notice how well I am doing in comparison to the world around me.
And you recommend that we should build a strong support system. And you point out in your book that isolation is an ingredient for self-absorption, depression, and emptiness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is the best way for us to go about building strong support systems?
Well, you know what? If you look for ways to serve, and there are always ways to serve, if you're looking for ways to love people, to make a difference in the world, you are going to attract a support system. I think we have to be intentional about it, but it's not just about asking, what can I get? But it's also about asking, what can I give? And so we have to know we can't go it alone. Resilient women don't go it alone. Resilient women have very strong support systems. And so you want to be very intentional. If your support system isn't very strong right now, if you've moved to a new location, if you're on a new job, be intentional about reaching out, staying connected, saying hello. You know, I've certainly encountered women who feel like, you know, I need a few more strong friendships, or I need a better professional support system, but they aren't really reaching out. They aren't really making those connections. They're waiting on others to reach out to them. So you want to be very intentional about nurturing relationships, about really reaching out when you encounter someone that, you know, either that might be a good mentor, that might be someone you have a lot in common with, and beginning to build those relationships and then strengthening them over time.
Now, in your book, the chapter Don't Go It Alone, you also talk about finding a mentor. And I know a lot of our listeners struggle with this concept of finding a mentor in a workplace. And you set forth some questions that people should ask a mentor when they're first connecting with them. Can you share maybe one or two questions that we should ask mentors when we connect with them?
Sure. You know, it's all about learning and growth, and people tend to like sharing about themselves. I mean, you think about it. If you've had people younger than you or less experienced and they come to you with questions, it's so easy for you to answer those questions for them. And so always be prepared when you're meeting people, even if it's an informal relationship, of finding out some key things about them that give you some insights that you might be able to apply to your own life. So, you know, a few of the questions, you know, what is the best decision you ever made? You know, kind of listen to hear what that is. What's the worst decision you've ever made? You know, what was the learning from that? And I think this is a really great one. If there was one thing you wish you'd known when you started, what would it be? You know, I think when you can get to the core of what someone has figured out over the years, it can really shorten your learning curve.
Well, we will open the phone line soon. If you have a question for Valerie, press 1 on your telephone. Valerie, I have a question for you, another question for you. Many of us have so many goals and dreams that we want to birth. We just don't know where to start. In your book, you say, don't be a maximizer. Can you explain this point and how it will help so many of us to focus on birthing our dreams one at a time?
Sure. So maximizer isn't my term. It's a psychological term. And, you know, basically we can be maximizers or we can be satisficers. Maximizers are constantly looking for what the absolute best, most perfect option can be in every situation. So, you know, this can occur if they're at the restaurant and they can't figure out what they want to eat because they're going through all the different options on the menu and they just can't make a choice because they want the best possible choice. It can happen if they're looking for a car. It can happen if they're looking for a spouse. I mean, people can get to the point where they miss the point. And the point is you want to have standards that are high, but you want to be clear about what those standards are. And when you find the option that meets those standards, particularly when we're talking about everyday life, when we're talking about everyday choices and decisions, you don't want to have to mull over decisions looking for perfection all of the time, because maximizers literally seek elusive perfection. Satisficers say, look, here's what my minimum standard is. You know, I've got this report that I need to do. It needs to be at a really high quality. You know what? I'll say if I was grading this in a academically, it needs to be at a 93. Right? And so when you get to 93, you're done. You move on to the next project. It saves you a great deal of time. It saves you energy. You don't find yourself going back over the same choices over and over again. And the reason this is so critical is that we live in a culture where we really value, you know, the freedom of choice. And what research shows is that choice is good. There's no question that choice is good. If you go to countries where people don't have many choices, people are not happy. But an overabundance of choice can lead to depression and overwhelm. And so you need to be able to narrow your choices, narrow the amount of things you do on a daily basis. And in a very practical way, I'm talking about things as simple as, you know, what do you eat for lunch every day? You know, does that need to be a decision that you have to constantly be looking to make? Because, you know, there's something that researchers call decision fatigue, which just means at some point we get tired, especially when you're in high-powered positions. You get tired of making decisions over and over again. So if you're able to limit those choices, you can actually increase your happiness and decrease your level of stress and even depression.
Valerie, nice to be on the call with you. My question is, how do you move beyond unconscious fears or unconscious limitations?
So here's what I would say about that. I would say that if you're aware enough to know that there might be a subconscious block, then even if you don't know exactly what that block is, you have to make conscious choices in the moment, in the heat of the moment, to be able to say, despite the fact that I'm feeling fear here, I'm going to take a step forward. Now, there's a process I talk about in the book of actually being very aware of your thoughts. So when you feel yourself blocked, being able to stop, and this might just be a 1 or 2 minute exercise, sometimes it's longer, but if you're able to stop and say, what am I saying to myself right now in the heat of the moment as I'm feeling afraid to move forward? What am I saying to myself? And so if your thoughts were like a ticker tape in Times Square, what would they be broadcasting to the world? And so a lot of times if we're just kind of sitting back imagining a scenario, it's hard to understand that. But when we are in the moment and it's happening, that's a great time for us to say in the heat of the moment, what am I saying to myself? And if what you're saying to yourself is not helping you, but instead it's blocking you, then the question is, what is the new thought that I could adopt? And it could be, you know, I'm afraid I'm going to fall flat on my face. You know, my new thought is, you know, it's possible that I may not do this very well, but I've made a decision that I want to move forward. So I'm willing to risk that I might fall on my face, and I trust that even if I do, I can get back up. So you're actually being very intentional about addressing whatever that fear thought is and replacing it with a new and more empowering thought.
And Valerie, when we're on our jobs and we want to increase our influence, how should we go about doing that? You set forth a couple of things that we can be doing. Can you share that with our listeners?
You know, influence can be far more powerful than a title. And so it really is important for us to, whatever job or position we're in, to look at ways to increase our influence. So the most important, I think, really is to be able to see the big picture, to know that when you have influence over others, influence on the job, it's not just about knowing what you want, but it's about knowing what everybody else wants. And if you know what they want and you can really kind of hone in on helping them to get what they want, you'll find that people are far more likely to help you with what you want. And so, again, that goes back to not always asking what can I get, but what can I give. Another is, you know, I when I said there were 7 key decisions in the beginning of the book, one of those decisions is I will focus on solutions and not problems. And I think particularly in corporate environments, we can get real focused on the problem. We can talk about the problem. We can rehash the problem. We can gossip about the problem. We can complain about the problem. But those that tend to have the most influence are those that don't get stuck on the problem. They start saying, well, what can we do about it? Leaders look for ways to move forward and find solutions. And so if you become that person that when you are going to your management, and there is a problem, you don't just come with the problem, but you come with a couple of solutions that may work. You begin having more influence because you've already kind of planted the seed of what the solutions might be. And even if they don't use those, if you make a habit of it, at some point people are going to be coming back to you because they begin seeing you as a person who is solution-focused.
And in your 7 key decisions that you just mentioned, you have a decision number 6, I will actively seek feedback and use it to grow. And we know that sometimes it's hard for us to take constructive criticism. But can you just explain to us why this is important for our growth?
Yeah, resilient people look for feedback. Resilient people are flexible. They make adjustments. They know that, you know, if they're steering a ship, they're going to have to make course corrections along their journey. And so sometimes you don't get constructive feedback. Sometimes you get destructive feedback. It's not very fun to hear destructive feedback, but you want to be able to ask, you know, is there a grain of truth in what this person is saying, even if they said it in a negative way? Can I take out the emotion, and can I choose to find the gift in it? Because sometimes there really is a gift. Sometimes there really is a message for you to learn. So you want to actively seek that feedback, even if sometimes it makes you cringe, because if you really want to grow, you really want to get better, you're looking for that feedback, and not just from your boss, but from your peers, from your clients, from the people that work for you, people all around you. You want to look for that feedback.
I think we have a question.
Hi, Valerie. I had a question. What my colleagues and I sometimes refer to as sort of the free time rut. And that is when, you know, we're so busy, and whenever you're busy, you say, oh, if I had free time, I would do X, Y, Z to improve whatever skill or whatever. We do things with our free time. And then all of a sudden you find yourself not busy, and it's like everything just shuts off. And whether it's, you know, a day or a week of just, I can't possibly bring myself to do anything. And usually what moves you out of the free time, right, is just having, you know, being forced back to being busy again. But you don't ever accomplish all those things that you said, you know, you would do if you had the free time. And if you had any suggestions about, you know, how to get yourself out of the free time rut as opposed to just being forced into being busy again.
Well, you know, I would say give yourself more free time. Because, you know, what happens to all of us, you know, people that people call overachievers, and I'm just, you know, taking a guess that people have called you that at some point in your life, is that we're always looking for ways to grow and to do more. And sometimes our brain and our body is trying to give us a hint. You know, when you really, you know, have worked hard and you have some free time, your mind probably doesn't feel like growing. Your mind feels like resting. And so, you know, I think sometimes that's a sign for us. Give ourselves permission to use that free time to do nothing. A couple of books ago, I wrote a book called How Did I Get So Busy? And, you know, I addressed some of those issues because, you know, I'm guessing you have a lot of drive and you work really hard. And you want to make sure that your expectations about what you're able to do in your free time are reasonable and healthy and are going to serve you well. So I would say, you know, maybe give yourself some free time and then give yourself a little more free time. And that second round of free time can be for those other things that you're looking to do.
Based on everything that you've written and all of the different people that you've coached, what's the takeaway that you would leave with us for tonight?
Well, the most important is, you know, and the reason I titled the book Successful Women Think Differently is that we have to be really aware of our thoughts. And, you know, I talk about this kind of definition around success, and I think that number one, success has to be based in purpose. You know, for the most successful women, service is what really fulfills them. And so asking yourself, you know, who do I impact? You know, how are lives better because people cross my path is a really important question. And that second element of success is that we have to be resilient. And you want to ask, you know, what's meaningful for me? How do I bounce back from my setbacks? What do I say to myself, as I mentioned a little earlier, when I'm facing a challenge or facing a setback? And then that last element of success is joy. You know, I talked about a lot of the research I share in the book, but one of the things I love most is that positive emotion actually expands our ability to deal with adversity and with stress. And so, you know, going back to the last caller about, you know, free time, when you have that free time, and even during the day when you're working, you know, find those ways to incorporate things that bring you joy. You know, laugh, have a good time, because ultimately success cannot just be about our titles and how high we climb the corporate ladder. Our success has to be about living a life that's purposeful, being able to be resilient when we face challenges, and being able to live a life that's filled with joy, that we're able to have fun along our journey.
Well, Valerie, thank you so much for spending the 30 minutes with us this evening. Everyone, make sure to get Valerie's book, Successful Women Think Differently. You can also catch Valerie on CNN on Saturday, the Reclaim Your Career segment. And for those of you who will be going to the CCWC conference in Chicago, Valerie will be presenting. Valerie, thank you so much. As always, I wish you success, and I look forward to seeing you in Chicago.
Well, Lori, I can't wait to see you in Chicago. I appreciate the invitation back, and I'm really looking forward to being able to meet everybody there. And hopefully I will hear from some of them online as well. And thank you so much for a great interview.
Thank you. And everyone, thank you for joining us tonight. Have a great week. Thank you.